From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, tens of thousands of Hong Kong protesters defy government demands they leave the streets.
The fear of populism is a deeply ingrained one in the entire government and Communist Party of the mainland.
Afghanistan's new president takes office, calling for an end to war, and a Liberian soccer star's song tries to raise awareness about Ebola. It's all ahead. I'm Sarah Williams. Pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong continue to defy China today, despite calls for them to disperse. Thousands of protesters have taken over usually busy streets in key parts of the Asian financial hub, and Beijing has warned against foreign interference. VOA's Bill Ide has more from Beijing.
Hong Kong authorities gave a rare show of force Sunday and early Monday morning as they battled with protesters. Scenes of the standoff broadcast live online were filled with chaotic scenes and tear gas-fueled clashes. On Monday, however, riot police withdrew and the situation calmed. The Hong Kong government has repeatedly urged protesters to peacefully withdraw, but the defiant rally against a recent ruling on electoral reform from Beijing is showing no signs of waning. The Occupy Central rally is a top trending topic on Twitter online. One picture showed protesters sitting and passing around homemade desserts, and others holding flowers as a sign of peace. Some online have begun to refer to the movement as the Umbrella Revolution because of how protesters have used the devices as shields against the pepper spray from police. Just how long the protesters can hold the downtown areas remains unclear, as well as whether authorities may step up the pressure again. But as the demonstrations have continued, many locals are reaching out to support those camped out. Hungry protesters applauded when food arrived, and pictures online showed large stockpiles of water donated by citizens in support of the movement piling up on city streets. Milky is an office worker and has been delivering goods to show her support. She says the effort is not organized, but self-driven.
People would circulate the news in the internet through Facebook, Twitter, and different kind of social network, and telling all the people at home or at other places what they need. So we know that what they need, and then we will buy the target material and then deliver it here. Okay. Yeah, and because some of the people, they are not really available to be sitting here. So sometimes they just, before they work, they just buy something and then deliver here. Or I have friends that he even used his lunchtime that buy some go-go's and deliver it to MLT.
Some put together makeshift tents with plastic pipes and wood as protesters geared up for a lengthier battle to maintain their blockade of some of the city's main throughways. Jay is a computer studies student at the University of Hong Kong. He says his parents do not support the protests, but feels a duty to be there.
I'm expecting our chief executive can come out and talk with me. I think as a leader, as a political leader, he should be stand up and obey us, the citizens, because we give them money to hire them. So they need to listen our voice and do the things for us. But he didn't. He only listened to the central government.
On Monday, China voiced its support for the Hong Kong administration and confidence in its ability to handle the situation. In Beijing, Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Hua Chunying says China is resolutely opposed to any illegal activities that threaten rule of law and social stability. She also warned foreign governments against supporting the protests. Hua says Hong Kong belongs to China and its affairs are purely an internal matter. She says that Beijing is resolutely opposed to any efforts by foreign governments to interfere in Hong Kong's internal affairs or support Occupy Central's illegal activities. In a statement released Monday, the U.S. consulate in the port city says it supports Hong Kong's well-established traditions and fundamental freedoms, such as peaceful assembly and expression. The statement said Washington does not take sides in the discussion about Hong Kong's political development, adding that it does not support any particular individuals or groups involved. The statement also called on all sides to refrain from actions that would further escalate tensions. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
Hong Kong Baptist University professor Michael DeGolyer tells VOA's Victor Beatty a week's worth of student protests was expanded by the so-called Occupy Central movement, which moved up its own protest from Wednesday.
The central government is very concerned about populism. You have to remember in the history of China that the Cultural Revolution was basically a populist movement driven by students. And they see the threat of populism as one of the biggest threats to both governance and the Communist Party, because, you know, Mao Zedong dismantled both the civil service and the Communist Party. And so the fear of populism is a deeply ingrained one in the entire government and Communist Party of the mainland. And they had a recent incident with a man by the name of Bo Xilai, who was head of actually a fairly minor city, but it was a second-rate city, let's call this, of inner China, who used populism and corruption to build a national network of influence that was barely stopped by the bureaucracy, that literally one promotion away from becoming untouchable. And that has scared the new president, President Xi, and the members of the bureaucracy quite a lot, the Communist Party quite a lot. He's been charged to get out there and make sure this doesn't happen again. And the idea that they would let the richest city in China, which is Hong Kong, have a direct populist nomination and be able to put in office a person who could command the resources of Hong Kong was just unthinkable. And that's also why the central government not only came out with this harsh ruling, but it is extremely unlikely to back down.
China Daily opined today. There's been speculation in the Western media about whether the central government will put a stop to the rallies. But if the local authorities handle the demonstrations properly and stop them becoming lawless or holding the city to ransom, there will be no need. Do you consider that a veiled threat?
Not very veiled. I think there are two ways they could do this. I mean, it would be very simple for the mainland to bring Hong Kong to heel. All they have to do is simply close the land border through which most of Hong Kong's food comes, turn off the water tap, and that's most of Hong Kong's water. And if they wanted to, simply close the port. And within a week, Hong Kong people would be both hungry and jobless and thirsty, and they wouldn't have to fire a shot. And they would make a very strong point about Hong Kong being totally dependent on China. If they did want to come in, though, and make a point to the rest of the world and to the rest of China, then they could very easily use force without any compunction. They've done this in the past.
Is Hong Kong on a precipice?
It appears to be heading that way. One of the real wild cards in all this is that China's National Day is October 1st. It's like any national day. It's not like July 4th in the United States. It's a national day, a day of usually celebration and flag raising and various types of ceremonies that engage you know, large numbers of people as well as high officials. All that is planned for the 1st of October. And, of course, the protesters are going to want to disrupt that. And the government is going to want that not to be disrupted.
Michael DeGolyer of Hong Kong Baptist University. Ashraf Ghani has taken the oath of office as Afghanistan's new president in a move being hailed as the country's first democratic transfer of power. In his inaugural speech today, the former World Bank executive called on the Taliban and other insurgent groups to come to the table for political talks, saying Afghans are tired of war. Ayaz Gul gives us details from Islamabad.
The inauguration ceremony at Kabul's presidential palace took place before a large number of foreign dignitaries, including neighboring Pakistan's President Mamnoon Hussein and senior U.S. presidential adviser John Podesta. Moments after taking the oath, President Ashraf Ghani swore in election rival Abdullah Abdullah as chief executive of his so-called National Unity Government. The newly created post is part of a power-sharing agreement the two men signed to end months of election deadlock over allegations of vote fraud. In his inaugural speech, President Ghani urged the Taliban and other anti-government insurgents to join peace talks to put an end to bloodshed in the country. Apparently referring to the deal with Abdullah, the president underlined that conflict is not the way to settle political differences. Ghani said, "We have established that political differences can be resolved through political means, and in this context, I call on the Taliban and Hizb-e-Islami to come to the negotiating table for political talks." Hizb-e-Islami is an Afghan militant faction fighting the NATO forces independent of the Taliban. President Ghani said security is a main demand of all Afghans, and he will go to any extent to restore peace in the country. "We are tired of war, and our message is a message of peace, but it should not be considered our weakness," explained the new Afghan leader. The Taliban has not immediately responded, but the militant groups had rejected the Ghani-Abdullah political deal as a U.S.-orchestrated agreement. The Taliban insurgency has increased attacks in recent months and has captured territory in some Afghan border areas. Observers believe the planned withdrawal of NATO forces has emboldened the Taliban, and its recent battlefield gains underscore the grave challenge facing Afghan security forces when they fight without international military support. U.S. officials have expressed confidence President Ghani will soon sign a bilateral security agreement with Washington that would allow a small American military force to stay in the country past 2014 to continue counterterrorism missions and train Afghan security personnel. Monday's political transition marked the end of President Hamid Karzai's nearly 13 years in power. He was installed as leader of Afghanistan in late 2001, shortly after a U.S.-led military coalition ousted the Islamist Taliban from power for harboring the Al-Qaeda network. Mr. Karzai refused to sign the security pact, accusing the United States of not helping him in his efforts to strike peace with the Taliban. But Mr. Ghani and Abdullah have promised to conclude the deal without further delay. In his Monday speech, President Ghani promised not to tolerate corruption and nepotism. He also vowed to introduce long-demanded reforms in the country's judicial system to ensure speedy justice to ordinary Afghans. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Islamabad.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. VOAnews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. VOAnews.com. Online news for a changing world.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. Human Rights Watch has warned that Turkey is drifting towards authoritarianism. The U.S.-based group claims in a new report that the rule of law is being eroded under President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who it says has launched a crackdown on dissent and media freedom. Dorian Jones reports for VOA from Istanbul.
The 38-page Human Rights Watch report says President Erdogan and the ruling Justice and Development Party are taking far-reaching steps to weaken the rule of law, control the media and internet, and clamp down on critics and protesters. The report's author, Emma Sinclair Webb, Human Rights Watch senior Turkey researcher, says the changes are deeply worrying.
Basically, over the last year, we've seen Turkish government respond to political opposition with an extremely heavy-handed approach, which basically is willing to sacrifice the rule of law, to erode judicial independence, and to really tear up the rule book and wield the stick against political oppositionists.
The report says the rolling back of human rights accelerated after last year's nationwide anti-government protests against Prime Minister Erdogan, who was elected president in August. President Erdogan insists the protests had little to do with democratic dissent, but were rather a coup attempt. Sinclair Webb says that since the unrest, there has been a crackdown on the media and the introduction of draconian laws controlling the internet, along with widespread prosecutions.
Then there are some very serious prosecutions of protesters for even attempting a coup against the government. They face a possible life imprisonment. So you've got still the crackdown against the Gezi protesters continuing a year on, and very little justice for those who were the victims of the massive police violence during the Gezi protests.
The report also highlighted what it says is a steady undermining of the rule of law. It cites last December's anti-corruption probe by the judiciary targeting senior ministers and their families. The government said it was an attempt to overthrow it and push through Parliament legislation giving it special powers to exercise more control over the judiciary. Much of the legislation was later overturned by the Constitutional Court. Sinclair Webb warns that the government is encroaching on the powers of the judiciary on a massive scale.
They want to be able to control judicial appointments, and they basically have shown signs of wanting to have prosecutors and judges who simply do the government's bidding and simply act according to the government's interests. Once you start creating a judiciary that does that, you lose all independence of the judiciary and you fundamentally undermine the rule of law.
The government insists that special powers are needed because the country is facing an unprecedented threat to democracy. President Erdogan claimed that a parallel state run by followers of a former ally, Muslim cleric Fethullah Gulen, is seeking to overthrow him. Gulen, who lives in self-imposed exile in the United States, denies the allegations. Human Rights Watch did praise the government for its efforts to end the three-decade conflict with the Kurdish rebel group, the PKK. The report highlighted the government reforms, giving minorities greater rights. But it warned that peace efforts have stagnated and called for the release of many non-violent Kurdish political activists who've been held in jail for years, many of whom have not been convicted of a crime. The report also cited the need to lift the statute of limitations on political murders and torture, which is preventing redress for hundreds of victims and their families. Thus far, neither the government or the president have commented on the report. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
The International Criminal Court began a hearing today on whether former Ivorian minister and youth activist Chablé Gaudé should face trial on charges of crimes against humanity. A close ally of Ivory Coast ex-president Laurent Gbagbo, Blé Gaudé is accused of playing a key role in violence that followed Gbagbo's loss in a 2010 election and his subsequent effort to stay in power. Lisa Bryant has more from Paris.
Pendant l'audience, le procureur doit étayer chacune des charges.
Sporting spectacles in a dark gray suit, Charles Blé Gaudé listened impassively to the opening remarks of presiding judge Sylvia Fernandez de Gourmendi.
Par conséquent, je voudrais souligner que cette audience n'est pas un procès.
This week's hearing at the International Criminal Court is to decide whether or not 40-year-old Blé Gaudé will face trial on four counts of crimes against humanity, including murder, rape, and persecution. At issue, violence in his native Ivory Coast between November 2010 and April 2011, after the presidential election between longtime president Laurent Gbagbo and Alassane Ouattara, the country's current president. Roughly 3,000 people were killed in the crisis that erupted after Gbagbo refused to accept defeat. Blé Gaudé was a close ally of Gbagbo and his first lady, Simone. Known as a charismatic firebrand, he headed a militant pro-Gbagbo group called the Young Patriots that was blamed for a campaign of post-election violence against Ouattara supporters. He denies the charges.
En l'espace de seulement quelques jours, la Côte d'Ivoire.
Speaking in French before switching to English, the ICC's chief prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, described events in November 2010 following the disputed presidential results. Within days, she said, the Ivory Coast had switched from hosting a democratic vote to a theater of violence marked by chaos and division.
We will demonstrate that the pro-Gbagbo forces, including forces directly answering to Blé Gaudé, that they are responsible for the deaths, the rapes, serious injuries, and arbitrary detention of countless citizens, civilians, who were perceived to support Mr. Ouattara. For these brutal criminal acts, the prosecution charges Mr. Blé Gaudé with crimes against humanity, and we will request the chamber to commit him for trial.
But defense lawyer Nicholas Kaufman dismissed the prosecution's argument, suggesting its case against Blaise Goudet was weak, unfocused, and unfounded. He presented his client as fiercely loyal to ex-President Gbagbo, whose rhetoric may have been abrasive, but was not violent.
I'm not going to deny that Mr. Blaise Goudet played a central role in the campaign for the re-election of Laurent Gbagbo. I will not deny that he fought for public opinion thereafter by challenging the election results. I will not deny that Mr. Blaise Goudet exploited his popularity and charisma in order to perform these roles with maximum potential. Nor will I deny that he mobilized the youth through large rallies which he organized at various intervals throughout the crisis. Nevertheless, there is a stark difference between legitimate public activism and criminal conduct.
While human rights activists have cheered the ICC's cases against Blaise Goudet and Gbagbo, they argue the court should also bring to trial Ouattara supporters accused of similar crimes to ensure equal justice. Earlier this month, the ICC confirmed that Gbagbo himself will go on trial for crimes against humanity charges also related to the 2010 and 2011 violence, making him the first ex-head of state facing prosecution at the Hague-based court. The Blaise Goudet hearing runs through Thursday. Judges will then have 60 days to decide whether to bring his case to trial. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
George Weah is one of Liberia's most popular citizens, a former world-class football star who, after his retirement from sports, got involved in politics in his home country. Now Weah has recorded an anti-Ebola song to raise awareness after being approached by the Ministry of Health. Beno Mukler met George Weah at his home and has our report.
Africa, Mama Africa, we must all rise. Together to fight Ebola.
George Weah sits in his living room at his house on the outskirts of Monrovia. The former soccer star just came back from a trip to Ghana, where he recorded a song about Ebola with his friend, musician Barima Sidney.
I was approached by the ministry to carry on awareness in our communities here in Liberia and the rest of Africa to fight against Ebola. And I thought, you know, music and television were the best things to do for people to get the message faster.
In the song, Weha talks about the ways of Ebola is transmitted and calls on his countrymen to take the necessary measures that are written everywhere on posters across Monrovia.
You know, it's a straight message. Mm. You know, let us fight against Ebola. And it could be your mama, it could be your papa, it could be your brother or sister, you know, from Liberia to Nigeria, from Guinea to Sierra Leone. Take precaution and be safe.
It could be your mama, your papa, brother, your sister.
The former presidential candidate opposes the government with his party, Congress for Democratic Change. But he says it's not the time to blame each other. While it's easy to point fingers at authorities or the healthcare system, everybody should think what he or she did wrong on a personal level, says Weha.
It's unfortunate that we wake up one day with this epidemic, Ebola. But again, we should hold ourselves responsible for the many deaths today. Because when it was declared that something called Ebola is coming into our society, a lot of people, they did not take it serious.
Weha is optimistic that the deadly disease can be successfully defeated in a common effort with the international community. Once this has been accomplished, Liberians should stay cautious and refrain from old habits so that the disease will never come back. Washing hands is one important precaution. Another is not touching the dead body of a loved one when one doesn't know the cause of death.
We have to refrain from doing what we did before. So what we need to do now is to live well, you know, and be clean, you know, keep our environment clean for germs and disease not to come around. Make sure that our community are safe and continue to even help those who are helping or the health workers, because those people risk their life and then take their advice.
Liberia is the country hardest hit by the current Ebola outbreak. More than 1,500 Liberians have been killed by the disease. The World Health Organization warns that without quick action, more than 20,000 people across Liberia and nearby countries could be infected. Benno Müchter for VOA News, Monrovia.
Thanks very much for joining us today for International Edition. You can get the latest breaking news and analysis on global events 24 hours a day on our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.